Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Boys, we have a very special ep this morning in that we have an all listener submitted questions ep. Shout out our listeners, the best listeners in radio. Are they the most listeners in radio? Not exactly. Do I wish there were a few more? I do. But I'm thankful for the ones that we do have, Piper. They are the loyal ones, and this episode is for them. But before we get into that, Pipe, tell us about our sponsor.
Yeah, our sponsor, as it has been for some time now, is Dwell Bible App. It's an audio Bible app. It's a subscription-based thing, so if you go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, you can see the special offer they have for you. It's 10% off of their annual subscription or 33% off a lifetime subscription. And what you get out of that is access to, apparently Ted is collapsing out of his chairs.
Right. Baby, are you okay? We're nervous, right?
Yeah,
now.
I'm fine, boys.
Stunned by the discounts.
KK, call 911.
Yeah. I share a studio with my sons who, also use my studio to play video games, and they left a lot of their stuff laying around, like, video game boxes and controllers, and I just knocked one off the desk.
Okay. So, good. So, death of video games, not death of Ted.
Yeah, it's not all glitz and glamour over here, boys. You know, I know we make it look that way, but...
Ted, if you're feeling anxious after that scary moment, Dwell does have some playlists for you to soothe your soul. So that's one
Baby,
of the things.
Baby, don't
you
I
can
know
get
it?
Out of this.
I've hit the. They have one called like I'm feeling glum or something, and I think that's my. That's probably my favorite.
It's quite literally a hat tip to U2 Enneagram 4.
I'll take it.
But yeah, so Dwell has playlists. They have multiple versions, multiple narrators. You can really engage scripture in whatever way fits your availability, your lifestyle, whatever it is. So again, go to dwellapp.io/happyrant. Check out their discounts. Check out the app. It is well worth your time and your money. I would encourage you to do that ASAP.
Piper, excellent work as always. Boys, let's get into these questions. These are really good. The first one here is one that I think probably we all deal with in some form or fashion, and it's this. How do you keep your sarcasm about things pertaining to the faith from becoming cynicism? Is there a line that you won't cross? So how do you keep your sarcasm about things pertaining to the faith from becoming cynicism? Is there a line that you won't cross? Piper, I think you and I are probably further along on the sarcasm spectrum than Ronald. I don't know what spectrum he's on, but we're on this one for sure. How do you deal with this?
This is probably going to sound counterintuitive and or like I'm completely rationalizing. So if it is, call BS on me. Sarcasm used judiciously actually keeps me from cynicism.
Oh, interesting. Explain.
If I can make a joke about something, if I can sort of point out the quirkiness in something, if I can keep it at the level of sort of levity, which is how I like to use sarcasm. I'm not that interested in using sarcasm to destroy. I certainly have done that. It's certainly a weakness of mine.
Yeah.
But it feels disgusting at this point in my life. I don't love that aspect of myself.
Sure.
Or that. So if I can keep it at the level of joke, it keeps me from getting furious.
Okay.
You know, or disgusted to the point of like, you know, all I want to do is complain and tear this thing down and, you know, turn away from this aspect of the church. You know, there are whole camps within evangelicalism that if I let myself would just rankle me to the point of like losing my temper. But if I can joke about it, it's actually better for my spiritual and mental health. And I do think there's an aspect of humor that kind of calls out the nonsense without picking a fight with the nonsense, which I think is what we try to do on this show. At least that's, you know, as much as we have an aim, that's one of them. So that's for me, that I think that's kind of how I navigate this sarcasm versus cynicism.
Yeah, that's good. I think for me, and I will want to hear Ronald on this, I used to navigate it really poorly. In fact, like cynicism was a way of life for me, you know, 15, 20 years ago, early career me, you know, really bad for my heart, really heart hardening. Honestly, probably bad for the churches that I was a part of, because I think I would see things that frustrated me. For example, one would be like, the reform gestation period being like 6 months and babies just flying out of people, you know, left and right. And we were struggling with infertility. And, yeah, instead of seeing that as something that the Lord gave us, to refine us, and ultimately he would bless us through it. You know, I kind of went inward and hardened my heart, got cynical. There were a lot of jokes. A lot of people thought I was funny, but, at the end of the day, it was not doing anything for me or for my church, and apologies to my church at that time. That was not a great period for me, but yeah, I think just being open to hearing this rebuke and applying it to myself has been good. And, yeah, obviously, like, we still see things. We still see things that are funny. We still comment on them, but not in a way that kind of fuels the fire of cynicism, I hope. And I think comedy in the culture has changed, too. You know, I think when we were growing up and when we were young adults, like, cynicism was the brand of comedy. And now comedy has sort of followed culture down the path of virtue signaling, where you have to, like, constantly be checking the cultural temperature and make sure that you're like looking like a big sweetie on all these issues, which is why it wouldn't be any fun to be like a late night talk show host anymore. Right. I used to think that would be the funnest job, but it wouldn't.
Yeah. Humor, I feel like, used to also kind of sit outside of culture. So, you know, like what were George Carlin's politics? What was Richard Pryor's politics? I don't know. Yeah, I just know he made fun of stuff. And it was funny. And now it's, you know, politics have to take, or I'm sorry, comedy has to take a side of politics, of
totally
whatever, you know, whichever side of the liberal conservative spectrum you're trying to, like, I have decided I'm going to piss those people off and I'm going to side with these people. And so, yeah, which is both, it's a little bit less funny and definitely more, it's cynical towards at least half the population at any given time.
Totally. And it's way less funny. Ronald, where are you at on sarcasm and cynicism?
Man, I thought this was such a great question, man. I think I like your guys' answers too. I think they're really good. I think, I don't know. The way I process it is sarcasm is looking at the ridiculousness of the world and the things around us without losing hope, and kind of calling out sort of the exaggerated, you know, some of the exaggerated, like, silliness that can, you know, that can make it up. And then, cynicism is when is sort of sarcasm without thinking there's any sort of redemptive or hopeful end to the things that we are allowing to shape us, you know? And so there is a fine line for sure. And I think, you know, we've probably crossed the line, you know, more than a few times. I mean, I do. You know, I mean, but yeah, I think sarcasm to me is satire. It's, you know, satirical in the sense that, man, you look at something and you go, that is so just redonkulous, you know, in so many different ways. And it's kind of like what Pipe said. It's being able to locate the ridiculousness of something to the point that, the truth of it shines a little bit brighter, and maybe the hopeful aspect of it sticks out a little further. So I think sarcasm in that way, like Pipe said, can really help. Cynicism is when you are just saying, nope, it's all corrupt. There is no redemptive quality to anything. And basically, you know, Jesus Christ has not been resurrected ultimately, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, I don't know. It's a fine line. I think just like the recognition of it, I think, is what will help, you know, keep us, you know, sarcastic and satirical without becoming cynical. Because, like, we don't want, like, what I tell people when they talk to me about this program is I say, no, it's not cynical. It probably leans into some of those areas a little too far on occasion, but it really is meant to be more satirical and sarcastic than cynical.
Baby, do people talk to you about the program a lot?
I mean, I don't know what a lot is, but mm-hmm. you know, like they like to talk about what it is that we're doing, sort of conceptually what we're doing. Yeah,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
I was at TGC yeah. last week. I had a bunch of conversations with guys that just recognized me from the rant, and we got to talk about it, and mm-hmm. it was actually really fun. And it was fun. What was really cool about it was they get that. You know, they get uh-huh. that aspect of it. Like, hey, you guys don't take yourself seriously. You're being sarcastic and satirical. But yeah, but we don't hear this sort of like hopeless, you know, it's all going to hell in a handbasket kind of like heart behind it at all. And I said, well, that's good. I don't think that's the heart. We're going to struggle as human beings with some of those things. But that's
for sure.
That's not the intention behind it at all.
Yeah, well, so. And I think sarcasm, like any joke, the question is it at somebody's expense or not?
For sure.
And so, you know, humor can 100% be at somebody's expense. And I heard somebody say, like, every joke is at somebody's expense, which is absolute garbage. It's just not.
Yeah.
You know, because if we're laughing with each other about something that we just did, both of us are being lifted up. Nobody is being torn down. And sarcasm can be, it's an expression of humor. It's not an inherently immoral thing. And so one of the things we are terrible at as a conservative church is laughing at ourselves. Self-deprecation, right. Not a strong suit in white reformdom, not a thing we're great at. And so sarcasm, I think, as we try to use it, actually pushes cynicism away because it's like, guys, we do some inane things. We have some crazy cultural habits in the church. We write ridiculous books. We say ridiculous things. You know, Ronnie's use of the word satire is spot on, just the way that we on the show try to kind of play way up some of the absurd to kind of draw it out and be like, look, it's, mm-hmm. you know, good. Another book on the role of women by a white middle-aged man. That's what we needed. Which is those kinds of things.
Shout out white middle-aged men.
Yeah.
Which we good. Are.
I mean, which is a decent chunk of our listeners. And so, yes, thank you for writing those books. You're all doing us a great service, especially the women. I think that aspect of sarcasm actually keeps cynicism at bay. It keeps us lighthearted in a world of the church where it's so easy to get bogged down. And did you see what so-and-so said? I can't believe this happened. And all of which is true, but also sometimes you just got to laugh at it. It's and kind of poke at it a little bit and be like, look, but also it's kind of silly, kind of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Baby, you dealt with a little bit of the fame of the rant on the road last week at TGC, it sounds like, didn't you? It's tough, isn't it?
Oh, it was tough.
I mean, do you have trouble?
Guys,
just trouble moving around?
You know, yeah. The masks help, and I do a double mask, so I put one over my eyes, too, to make sure that I can actually walk through the bookstore, just even make it.
I just actually put a bag over my head.
I mean, I need to make it at least 3 or 5 feet without getting stopped, boys. I mean, that's
kind of
goal.
A metaphor for this podcast as a whole, just a mask over the mouth and the eyes.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That's good, Pipe. That's deep. I don't understand it, but it's deep. Yeah, yeah.
It seems fitting.
It's nonsensical, but I do like it. Boys, I've got a completely different question, different type of question. This one seems very pointed, and it's as follows. Do you know any single Christian guys that aren't a-holes? Now, here's the question again. Do you know any single Christian guys that aren't a-holes? I had an idea. I had a business idea about a year ago where I wanted to set up a Happy Rant dating service similar to Christian Mingle. And I think it would have rained cashish and we would have been in the business of bringing listeners together. That's what I think this is getting at. But it's getting at a deeper question, which is there seem to be more great Christian women in our churches that are single than Christian men that are single. My question for you, men of the cloth, is twofold. A, do you see this? And B, why do you think it is? And I guess C, the original question, do you know any good single Christian dudes? Ronald, we'll start with you.
Yeah, gosh, man. I mean, dude, it's a little tricky, right? I'm thinking of a couple of dudes at our church that are like super awesome stand-up dudes.
I'm doing the same thing.
I dig them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not.
Yeah.
They're the least jerky dudes I've ever known in my life, to be quite honest.
Right.
And I'm... I don't know. There must be some stereotype with there's some stereotype with that I'm not really getting. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I can give you a couple of the categories of a-hole that this this particular listener. I won't name her because she's a dedicated listener. And for her sake, if she was to meet a guy, I wouldn't want there to be like, oh, you're the one who thinks Christian single guys are a-holes. So it was a great question, though. So a couple categories. One, there's just like the adult adolescent. So like the 28-year-old guy who probably has a decent job, makes money, but just does nothing. He's a complete waste of space in the church, in, you know, and this isn't the like parents' basement guy. This is the like, you don't do anything. You don't offer anything. You contribute nothing. And your idea of commitment is like, I do CrossFit and that's it. You know, like you're committed to your gym and to no humans. There's another version of single Christian guy who is kind of culturally Christian, but like his sexual ethic and what he expects out of a relationship is not any different than what you'd meet at a bar. There's a version of single Christian guy who has been reading too many of those books about roles of men and women by middle-aged white guys and is really certain that he's ready to be the head of a household at, you know, 27 and never having been in a serious relationship. So there's a few different brands of this. The waste of space guy, I think, is the most common.
I would agree, but I'm with Ronald in like, I'm thinking about our church because it's impossible to like, you know, consider this question and not think of your own church. And we have a handful of like really great quality dudes who are serving the church. They have vibrant, like, lives of the mind, and it's a head scratcher. You wonder why these guys are still single, but this is coming from like an a-hole who's been married for 25 years, so it can go the other way too.
I guess that's another question. Do you know any married Christian guys?
Well, that was gonna a-holes? Be that. I mean, dude, I know plenty of questionable married dudes, so there's a high YES
myself
on that
included.
One, you
know? There is. I do know this though, and tell me if you've seen this phenomenon. And we probably can't talk about this. Never mind. I don't know. I've just seen. I'll try
That's
to frame
never
it in a way.
This before, so go yeah, for it.
I'll try to frame it in a way that doesn't make me sound like the worst. If you're a Christian guy and you hang around long enough, like you'll probably end up with a smoke. You know what I mean? Where you see these Christian guys who are like very average looking, average to bad looking, and just by nature of like the numbers game of the church. You know what I mean? Cut this out. I sound terrible. but it's a real thing, and I'm sticking with it.
So flip side of this. Let's
we can't. It's 2021. We can't talk about the attractiveness of anyone anymore.
No, we can't. That's comparative and derogatory. Also, let me throw some single guys under the bus again and then just back the bus over them. A huge number of Christian single men are under the impression that they should be meeting and marrying like a fully formed woman of God who they view as a 10 out of 10 on the attractiveness scale. So
that is
everything
true.
About like, there is no sense of this woman is going to grow into anything. She is also like me, so on some trajectory. Like, she doesn't meet all 72 criteria, 75 theses of criteria that I have laid out.
She has to be perfect immediately.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I get my whole life
95
to deal
theses
with my
of
issue.
Perfect woman, and she meets like 62 of them. She's not it. You know, she's an inch too short. Her eyes are a shade too green, and also, you know,
dude. So my question to you is like somewhat serious question. Where does that mentality come from? Because it's not like these guys are like Tom Brady.
They don't.
You know what I mean?
95 theses of anything.
Exactly. That would presuppose that they view themselves as like, you know, male model meets like world famous theologian. I don't know. And that's not the case. So where's that mentality coming from?
Oh, I think a lack of self-awareness is a big piece of it. I think they might actually view themselves as male model meets, you know, D.A. Carson level theology. I think in their minds, they have so much to offer. And, when you're walking into a relationship thinking I have so much to offer, it might not be the best foot to start out on.
That's fascinating.
There's a difference between like having enough self-confidence to ask somebody out and having enough self-confidence to think I'm blessing you by asking you out. And I think a lot of guys kind of fall into the second category.
Fascinating.
There's also just a lot of guys who won't ask anybody out, like decent dudes who probably just need some steel in their spine to be like, the cost of asking somebody out and being shot down or it not going great is relatively low, but you got to try. Yeah. Like, just put yourself on the line, bud.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree. You don't see a whole lot of that anymore. And that's a shame. All right. Next question. What is a current pet peeve of ours? What is a current pet peeve of ours?
Individually, I'm assuming each of us could just get to
yeah, we just covered that.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't have to think it through as a program. As a company. Individual pet peeves. Ronald, do you have one dialed up?
Oh, dude.
I knew that was where this one was going.
It's unbelievable, man. Like I just have like a list of these things in my back pocket. Oh, let me just grab my pet peeve list.
Here's a pet peeve of Ronnie's. Any direct question.
There you go. That is my pet
Any
peeve.
Any question that says pick one thing.
Right.
What's your favorite band right now? It's like it puts me back in when I was like seventh grade, you know, like what's your favorite movie? It's always
dude, right. Like why do people ask that to adults? You know what I mean? Like, what's your favorite band right now?
It's like,
now?
Dude, I haven't listened.
That's a ridiculous.
I haven't listened to a band in like 20 years. What are you talking about? You know?
Right.
I think we did just nail Ronnie's pet peeve, and it's the question of like, pick the best of, favorite of anything.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, I love speaking just sort of in the moment and on my feet. But not when it comes to like likes and dislikes. It's the weirdest thing to me. I freeze up. I mean, dude, seriously, ask me to open up Romans 8 and preach a sermon and I'll have something. I'll just do it. Right. It's like, but that, it's like, does that guy know how to speak right now? The answer is no, I don't. So that's my pet peeve.
Piper, I feel like you might be a little bit more of a pet peeve guy.
Just a tad.
Than Ronald.
Oh.
What are we working with over there?
I feel like this question was made for me. I feel so loved and known by the listener who submitted it. this is going to be a therapy session. Ronnie said he doesn't have a list of pet peeves. I do, actually. Not a written list, nice. But a daily list of things that I have to try hard not to be mad at.
Okay.
You know,
it's very thematic in your life, Pipe, so we'll talk after the...
Well, anger is the easiest thing for me to arrive at in almost any situation. It's the easiest, like, strong emotion. Just, oh, I got annoyed. Okay, that just happens real easy. So pet peeves come easily. So I decided to narrow it down to just one for the sake of time and everybody's enjoyment. So internet influencers are a thing. That's not really a pet peeve of mine because as long as the opportunity exists for people to take advantage of other people and try to get famous, that's going to happen. The pet peeve is people who buy into that stuff. You know, so
yeah, describe.
So I think last episode, at the end of it, we talked about the like being famous versus being skillful. And then we kind of talked a little bit about like the skill of getting famous and the inability of the average person to see the difference between that person's good at stuff and that person is good at looking like they're good at stuff drives me nuts because what it does is it gives voice to idiots. You know, people who are influential on products or on politics or on, you know, whatever, anything. So, you know, social justice simply because of their number of followers, all of which is gained by gadget and it's all fake. And so my pet peeve is the people who follow influencers and actually pay attention to them. You know, I expect that out of my 12-year-old because she doesn't know yet what matters and what doesn't. When I see it from like a 26-year-old, it drives me absolutely nuts that they are taking cues from somebody with 800,000 Twitter or TikTok or whatever followers who has never done anything to deserve the attention of anybody.
Okay, so I totally agree. And I want to ask a follow-up question to you both as men of the cloth, a somewhat serious one. Like, what do you think is going on there in the heart? Like, there is something, what I'm hearing is there's something in a person that makes them want to follow something. And, you know, we dangle this, you know, person with 800,000 TikTok followers or whatever in front of them, and they're just slack-jawed in front of it. Like, why is that? What's going on there? How do we sort of build into our kids a bit more like thoughtfulness and discernment on this level? Either one of you.
Yeah, I think, I think discernment, I mean, that's it, isn't it? You know, I think, like, you know, it's so personality driven too. So you have the person that is just, they're kind of caught up in things that are, you know, entertainment based or trendy. And man, I love this big bombastic thing that is everywhere, that's easy to access, that everybody's kind of glomming on to. And there's something fun about it, or there's something that kind of, you know, there's something that makes me want to be a part of it on some level. And then there's the other guy that's like, well, because everybody likes it, I automatically just, you know, go the other way, and I don't touch it. So both are like being influenced by something in particular, but just in a different way. But I think it's just discernment, you know, like, I mean, can we, like, what do we define as something worth following and worth listening to and worth receiving from, that's going to, you know, sort of like benefit, you know, like our inner health, our spiritual health. I mean, that's what we're trying to teach our kids. I mean, that's what we're trying to teach our congregations and our students. It's like, go after the thing that's going to be most beneficial and enriching to your soul. And, you know, and occasionally eat a candy bar because that's good, right? So even that in and of itself is discerning. I think you're talking about discernment. We have to teach discernment. It's not really taught as much.
Well, yeah.
And I think as far as discernment goes, like giving people some basic questions to ask about what they're watching. So like when I ask my daughters, why do you like so-and-so, whatever current, you know, they don't have social media, but they're around kids with it all the time. And so they're, you know, they're aware of all the same, whatever influencers whose names I don't know, and who will be gone in 15 minutes. They're just like, oh, they're so cool. Okay, that's not an answer. You didn't think through anything. All you did was express the same energy that sucked you in the first place. So, but when you start asking questions like, what are they telling you? Like, what are you gaining from this? What is, you know, what's the benefit of this? No answers whatsoever. And some of that's because they're 12 and 15 and don't know how to think that way just yet. But I think part of teaching discernment is teaching them how to think that way. Like, what are you gaining from this? What is the cost of the time versus the benefit of the time you're putting into these videos? And so with influencers, the other question is like, what have they done to justify my attention?
Yeah, you know, that's a great one.
What have they done? You know, so, and if you look at, well, they have 800,000 followers. That's not what they've done. That's what 800,000 people fell prey to. That's not the same thing. So what have they accomplished? What do they say on an ongoing basis that's like, oh, they're brilliant, you know, they're contributing something. I think just some of those basic, and that's even outside the spiritual realm. That's true of like, you want writing advice. Okay. Who is worth listening to? Who has done something worth listening to that makes you go, oh, that guy. Like, I see books all the time on Amazon. It's like, how to get published. And I look at it, I'm like, this person doesn't work in publishing and has never been published. They self-published this book on Amazon.
Exactly.
They don't listen to them. That's it. That's
exactly.
They're just selling you stuff. So
yeah,
I think it's just the current version of a snake oil salesman. You know, people used to go from like town to town and open up their case and sell little bottles of tincture and whatever. This is just the Instagram, TikTok, whatever version of that stuff.
Tincture, dude. Solid word.
Mm.
I actually just kind of like that word.
Yeah, I kind of want to use that a lot today. I got so many meetings today. I'm going to drop that thing in there just judiciously.
Just a lot of meetings, baby. Wow.
If you can get tincture into every meeting today, I think
that will be my goal.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's make that a little project.
I'm going to write it down in the context it was used, and we can rant about it next week. How did you use
tincture? Oh, that would be amazing.
Solid, baby.
Ronnie's
a little homework for you. Just to put a wrap on that topic, though, don't you boys think there's a real like market opportunity for actual talent and actual hustle? Like, I think there's never been a better time to be a writer than now, because everybody's so distracted by social media. I mean, everybody's trying to tweet 55 times a day instead of really caring about writing well. So, I mean, I think there's a chance to really do something. If you can really develop a talent and really actually be good at something. And, I don't know, there's some hopefulness in that, I guess, for me as a writer.
I think in some senses, if you take a step back, it's the same as it's always been hard work. Doing the hard work of becoming skillful it never bears fruit as fast as cutting corners does.
Yeah.
Social media influencer is cutting corner to fame built on nothing. Same with like building a mega church on marketing as opposed to like on a meaningful ministry. Anything that cuts corners, you get there faster, you get the gratification faster, and you crumble faster. Whereas if you can build a portfolio of written work that's just substantial through and through, you might not sell as much, but the contribution you made to every single person who, like, you can stand behind it. Right. Every single one of these influencers runs the risk of, 30 years down the road going, yeah, that wasn't about anything.
Exactly.
Whereas my guess is what you write, what Ronnie writes, what I write 30 years from now, we're going to go, I might write it a little differently, but I'm really glad I did it. I meant it.
Yeah, man, I hope so. Absolutely. I hope so. Well, Pipe, we've done what we always do on this program in that we've wandered to and fro throughout a few topics submitted by listeners. Again, thank you to the best listeners in radio. We appreciate what you do. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
I'm Don Hawkins, and I once heard Chick-fil-A founder Truett Cathy say, "You can tell if a person needs encouragement, check to see if they're breathing." I'd like to invite you to my weekly podcast, Encouragement for You, featuring encouraging guests like Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley, Dan Cathy, the late Dr. Frank Menrith, Josh McDowell, and more. To subscribe to my weekly Encouragement for You podcast, go to lifeaudio.com. That's lifeaudio.com.